Get a balanced analysis on both domestic and international topics within the framework of cross-cultural comparisons. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to Dialogue. The annual Shangri-La Dialogue has just wrapped up in Singapore, where defense ministers gathered to discuss security concerns in Asia and around the world. To shed some light on key global issues and challenges facing the world today, I talked to two participants of the summit, Cui Tiankai, former Chinese Vice Foreign Minister in the first half, and Chen Dongxiao, President of the Shanghai Institute for International Studies in the second half. That's our topic. I'm Xu Qinduo. Welcome to Dialogue, Mr. Ambassador. Well, the U.S. Defense Secretary talked about the U.S. success, basically, in building its leadership in the Asia-Pacific region by reinforcing alliance or by building new alliances. But others expressed the concern that, you know, such a behavior could lead to, say, the division or dividing, destabilizing, or even militarizing the entire region. I wonder, what's your opinion on that?
The speech by the U.S. Secretary of Defense has got a lot of attention, but honestly, he has not offered some fresh ideas, not many constructive proposals. For instance, they talk about U.S. leadership in the region. But my question is, where are they trying to lead us? Towards greater stability or deeper division? More cooperation or more confrontation? It's not so clear. And we have to listen to what they say, but more importantly, we have to watch what they are doing. So the challenge and the challenge to and violation of One China policy, for instance, and the mounting reconnaissance activities so close to China, setting up of confrontational camps, military alliances, and also introducing of highly enriched nuclear material into the region. All these things, are they helping us to achieve greater stability, or are they introducing more elements of instability into the region?
Mm-hmm. A related question, I think, is also raised actually after the speech by a delegate, is about you know, when he talked about the U.S. leadership by building these alliances, you know, usually it's done by bypassing the ASEAN or ignoring the ASEAN centrality, which says that, you know, ASEAN is the dominant regional platform to overcome common challenges or involve with external big powers. So you see, you know, this, they talked about, you know, respecting ASEAN centrality. But at the same time, if you look at what they have done, they are ignoring the ASEAN centrality. So there's a contradiction. It was raised in the meeting, but in Lord Austin, intentionally or, you know, or unintentionally, he avoided answering this question. How do you see this relationship, you know, ASEAN centrality, and then the U.S. is doing things basically by building new mechanism, new initiatives, you know, outside or beyond ASEAN?
ASEAN centrality is one of the most important principles in regional cooperation in Asia Pacific, and ASEAN countries attach great importance to that. We in China also attach great importance to that. Frankly, I think the United States very often just pay lip service to this principle. They also talk about, well, they like this idea. But watch what they are doing. There's no ASEAN in Quad, there is no ASEAN in AUKUS. So where is the central role of ASEAN? We can only see the absence of ASEAN.
The Chinese defense minister, you know, has a speech on the China's security initiatives. We know last year Chinese President Xi Jinping put forward the Global Security Initiative. You know, it stresses the inclusiveness. But if you look at the U.S., it's really about, you know, camps against another country. Is that the difference, the major difference you see in the two visions of security in the region and around the world?
President Xi Jinping has put forward three global initiatives: the Global Development Initiative, the Global Security Initiative, and the Global Civilization Initiative. All these initiatives are in the framework of our proposal to build a community of nations for a shared future. And for the security initiative, I think the key idea, the central idea, is to adopt a new security approach based on common security, comprehensive security, cooperative security, and sustainable security. So the security approach China would advocate will very much be based on common interests of the regional countries and would aim at a more secure and better common future. It's very inclusive. Its stress is on cooperation, and it will have the equal participation of all the regional countries. But what the US is doing, they're setting up exclusive, confrontational, small groups, and they are advocating the so-called democracy versus autocracy and so on. So they are trying to divide the world, divide the region into different categories of countries. I don't think that will help anybody's security, including United States' own security. More division will only lead to more conflicts, more confrontation. So the end outcome is everybody's interests will be hurt.
That's an interesting point, you know, where US often, by their policy or behavior, they create this kind of a crisis, a conflict, or confrontation, and then they would basically blame the Chinese side for not picking up the phone to talk to them. On the Taiwan question, the US Defense Secretary said that, you know, US remains committed to preserving the status quo and basically oppose unilateral moves to change the status quo. But at the same time, we do see, for example, the former US House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, you know, their provocative visit to Taiwan, and the US continues to sell arms to Taiwan, and recently they strike a trade deal with Taiwan, which of course sort of violating the One China principle. How do you make of this? You know, what do you make of the US policy, the rhetoric, and then the action on the ground?
Well, first of all, the Taiwan question is entirely domestic affairs of China. But because of US intervention, the problem is still with us. So if the US is truly committed to this One China principle, or what they call One China policy, they should stop interference in China's domestic affairs. They should stop arms sale to Taiwan, stop official ties with Taiwan, and really implement the three-judge communique. I think that's the essence of the Taiwan question.
Lord Austin did say that, you know, conflict is not imminent, nor is it unavoidable. And he seems to be stepping back or walking back a little bit from previous, you know, talk by U.S. generals of a war, a military conflict across the Taiwan Straits, like in 2022, 2025. Or 2027, etc. So do you see there's a, say, reduction, or stepping back in terms of policy from the US side?
Again, we should not only listen to what they say, we should watch what they are doing.
Okay, so action speaks louder.
Yeah, of course, words. Of course.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time and insight. Thank you, Mr. Chen. Welcome to Dialogue. I want to your opinion or your understanding of the Shangri-La Dialogue, the 20th edition in 2023. So what's the major theme of this year's dialogue?
Well, see, I've been to Shangri-La Dialogue quite many times. And I still remember I attended Shangri-La Dialogues on their 10th anniversary, that about 10 years ago. And this is the 20th anniversary. I think that the organizers, WIWS, a think tank, as well as a Singaporean government, they want to stress a more balanced term or message in their structuring the themes, the sessions of dialogue. And so if you look at those seven plenary sessions as well as many of the special sessions. They have focused on United States, China, Asia-Pacific Partnership, Security Cooperation, ASEAN Centrality, as well as a Ukraine war and its implications on Asia-Pacific. So I think at least in terms of those players, they try to be more inclusive of those small players, mm-hmm. as well as many other specific issues with more dimensions, cyber, nuclear, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Inclusive, and also they try yes. to be objective, yes. neutral, let's yeah. say.
Well, not necessarily neutral, but I think at least
be more balanced.
They try to bring more perspectives.
More perspectives. That's the way to put it. Well, 10 years ago, you were here, joining this dialogue. Now, 10 years later, do you think this global security situation is worsening? We have a Ukraine war, as you mentioned, and now, China-U.S. tensions are rising in the Asia-Pacific region. So people see there's more uncertainty than certainty. How do you see that?
Well, I agree that we have seen a deteriorating security situation, both globally and regionally. I think that generally speaking, compared with, for instance, Europe, Asia-Pacific is relatively stable, but we obviously have seen more tensions, including, as you said, that the U.S.-China more constrained relationship, as well as many other regional tensions in this area. So obviously we have seen a worsening situation and also a more difficulties in security governance.
Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes to the Shangri-La dialogue, often probably the focus has always been like China-US relationship in the arena of security affairs. And for this year, of course, the Chinese Defense Minister Li Xiangfu talks about China's new security initiative. We know that last year, the Chinese President Xi Jinping put forward this global security initiative. For a lot of people, probably they are not familiar with this. What's the gist of this initiative?
I think that the key messages of this security initiative will focus on that the security is more with others rather than against others. That means the new security initiative, which has been initiated by President Xi quite many years ago, as well as I think nowadays has been echoed many, many times by Chinese officials, including the General Li's keynote speech. I think that his speech continues to focus on the comprehensiveness of the security we have faced today, and also the more cooperative nature in the security. So I think that the key message is the security should be with others for the common security, rather than the security against each other.
So the security of the country A should be taken into consideration. I mean, so is the security issue of country B.
Yes, this is the nature of the world we are living in, because we are living in a hyper-connected, interdependent world. Whatever the size of the country, of the economies, whatever the political or whatever the differences of the political institutions and ideologies of each countries, that we have to live with together for those common goods of our security, as well as against those common challenge. So I think that this is a hyper-connected, interdependent world in which we have to stress the importance of a comprehensive dimensions of security, which means that not only refers to those traditional sovereignty, territorial security or safety, but also we need to deal with how the climate change, for instance, how those public health situation, and how those even financial instability and its implications for the security of each other. So I think they are related to each other, and we have to face with them. No country would say that this country is immune from over others, from those threats or challenges. So this means that we have to be inclusive. We have to work together against those common bads.
With that in mind, you know, how do you describe or how do you characterize the Chinese vision of the regional security in the Asia-Pacific region?
I think nowadays the biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges we face in Asia-Pacific is we have seen the rising of those ideology-based military alliance or bloc, which exclusive to some other countries, particularly excluding China. Such kind of a ideology-based, military-focused alliance, they have polarized rather than help or facilitate the unification or integration of this region. So I think this is one of the biggest challenges that we need to work together to be against, but it's quite tough.
Are you talking about AUKUS between, I would say, among the Australia, US, UK, and also the Quad and initiatives like this?
Yes, I think that we have seen, I myself quite concerned about those trend, particularly the AUKUS. I think that it is this a newly emerged one, military security alliance, focusing on China, a so-called China threat. I think that it will only make this region much more polarized, and also, you know, not prevent the proliferation, but actually had lead up to a more proliferation of nuclear or nuclear-related issue. I think that that's quite dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we look at the Ukraine issue, and the, let's say, the Chinese security or new security initiative view, what went wrong, and then we have this, crisis here in European continent?
I think fundamentally speaking, the Ukraine war or Ukraine crisis is the result of a failure of security governance on the continent of Europe. Specifically speaking, the NATO's relationship with Russia. I think that the security dilemma, while it's always a kind of a phenomena with different degrees in different parts of the world, but the security dilemmas between Russia on one side and NATO on the other side is extremely deteriorated in the past few decades. And I think that NATO's expansion itself have not addressed the legitimate concerns, security concerns of Moscow, even if NATO always rejected those claims. But at the same time, I think that it's quite a deep-rooted strategic suspicion between two sides, and the failure in governing of the security dilemma and make Moscow take a quite extreme or radical manner.
So speak of NATO, I think I understand that some European politicians or experts would say, they are defensive. It's a defensive organization. Sometimes it sounds like it's an innocent, charity organization, but others would see it's a military organization. It's threatening by nature. And then they are setting a liaison office in Tokyo. And China is concerned with that kind of expansion of NATO somehow, into Asia Pacific. Are you concerned with that?
Oh, yes. I think that NATO is a military organization set up in the Cold War era for the competition with the Warsaw Pact in the Cold War era. And the Cold War has been gone for more than 30 more years already, but the NATO is still there. And it is expanding. And also there's a trend of a globalization of NATO or Asia-Pacificalization of NATO. I think that this actually has caused more security challenge for those countries in Asia-Pacific, including China. And I also believe that some of other countries in Asia Pacific, like ASEAN countries, they are also quite concerned about the expansion of NATO or the Asia Pacific version of the NATO.
It related to, say, the speech by the U.S. Defense Secretary, Lord Austin, which is basically surrounding the theme of U.S. leadership in the Indo-Pacific. The Chinese side has put forward its version or its vision of a security in terms of a security initiative globally and probably for China too. And here the U.S. is talking about its leadership. So how do you see these two different versions of, or two different vision of security for the Asia-Pacific region?
Well, I think that the key differences is between one is the perception of the threats. I think from Beijing's perspective, the key challenge or the threat to the regional security is those ideology-based and the military focused alliance which will make this region even more fragmented and polarized instead of a more integration and unification. So I think this is always Beijing said that we need to focus on the inclusiveness and the cooperative security. While I think that Washington's perspective is the strategic culture or their strategic security culture is focused on the so-called enemy hunting. And they are more concerned about the so-called pacing peer, here refers to China. And they believe the rising China is definitely the threat of this security. Actually, is the threat, I think that they believe it is the challenge to the leadership or the primacy of the United States in this region. But of course, I think that this is very misleading. But anyway, I think that as long as the Washington continue to build up those security alliance, it has caused more concerns than instability.
The more instability, or let's say, you know, in terms of peace and prosperity, probably not that sustainable. If you insist on your leadership,
I think so. In the long term, it must be unsustainable if China is always excluded in those multilateral security arrangement.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, China-U.S. security relationship is critical in terms of peace and stability in this region. Right before the dialogue, the Shangri-La dialogue, you know, there's an episode of basically the Chinese side rejected the U.S. overture to have meetings between the two defense ministers. And of course, you know, the reality is like the U.S. has failed to lift or to remove, you know, the coercive measures on against the Chinese side, against the Chinese defense minister. So if the U.S. truly wants to have a dialogue, I mean, how difficult it is to remove those measures?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that we have seen a contradictory or conflicting message coming from Washington. On one side, I think that to pursue or to have a serious lines of communication, including the DOD on their side and the PLA on China's side, is very important, because to have those DOD and the PLA people always have a dialogue, particularly at the senior level, is very important for the confidence building and even for crisis management. But on the other side, as you said, Beijing is not in the interest of the talk, just for the sake of talk. The purpose of a talk is to build up the confidence, as well as to reduce the miscalculation. And I think that in order to show the sincerity, Washington should do something to show that such kind of dialogue is not only for the sake of dialogue, it's not only kind of a show, but also to really to reduce the tension, to reduce the miscalculation. And I think that some of those sanctions are very important signals that Washington should do, removing those sanctions by their previous administrations. So I think that this is the reason why Beijing rejected that. I think that Washington's statements that they are quite concerned about the so-called Beijing's uninterested in engaging with or have a dialogue with United States is very misleading.
Yeah, it's they are blaming the Chinese side for, in their words, you know, lack of willingness to engage.
It's unfair. It's obviously unfair. I think that Beijing is interested in. Beijing's always said that we are going to have a talk with you, but talk for what?
So basically, the Beijing's top concern is like you know, whether there is a sincerity from Washington to have
and
dialogue,
and whether it is reliable, has credibility because of those what I call the political decay in the Washington. Whether president's words or their senior officials' words could be kept in the next administration, whether those remarks by executive branch will be, you know, will maintain a short period of time because of strong opposition from the Congress. So I think Beijing, it is very legitimate for Chinese people to say that if you are going to interest in a real serious dialogue, show your sincerity as well as political will. But so far, I don't think that those political will is strong enough. Or if sometimes we have seen a lot of conflicting messages.
Especially, you know, given this U.S. domestic situation, you know, the only consensus, you know, inside of the country is probably hostility toward China.
Yes.
So
yes.
There's a legitimate question, you know, whether if there's any agreement, whether that will be carried about.
A lot of promise or commitments has not been fulfilled because of a toxic atmosphere in Washington. So I think that has made Chinese people, Beijing, even more suspicious about whether those kind of talk will produce a substantial result.
Yeah, will be meaningful.
Meaningful.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. Nice talk.
The Beijing Hour, your window on China and the rest of the world.
Deep Dive, a podcast of CGTN Radio. We go beyond headlines with reporters from around the world. Search for Deep Dive on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. Take a deep dive into the news every week. Hear our conversations.